Hi, Mike Mikaelas.
Hello, how are you doing?
Oh, yeah, yeah, cool. By the way, this is a DevOps interview.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And could you introduce yourself, please, for Japanese fan of yours?
My name is Mark Mikaelas, and I run a company called IntelliTech. Mm-hmm. And there we do sort of high-end software engineering, high-end consulting. We do lots of DevOps.
Cool.
A lot of training.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so... And I attend your session, and it was very, very impressive. That is why I shoot this session.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, because you are very talented.
Well,
right?
Thank you.
Unicorn, right?
Thank you.
So, first of all, could you introduce your about your books and your today's session?
Okay. Well, my books are in the area of C#. I've written quite a few books in C#, at least recently. My most recent book was Essential C# 6,
cool.
And it just came out about two weeks ago.
2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Brand new.
Well, I've got other editions. That's the fifth edition of the book.
Ooh.
So that one's been republished multiple for many years now. My first book was in 1998 or something. I'm not sure.
1998?
So I've been writing a bunch of books since then. I don't know how many, but
cool.
Several. Yeah.
Cool.
My talk today was in DevOps metrics, and so in that talk, what I discussed was the whole principle of what metrics to choose, what are the principles of metrics that you want to have involved, and I talked about the fact that there are certain characteristics of metrics that are good, but which ones you choose, which ones your organization adopts, is very much dependent on your perspective, sort of what perspective you're coming from when you choose to use DevOps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That metrics could help a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, I think people are looking for specific guidance. They want to know which metrics they should use.
Mm-hmm.
But that principle is very difficult because each person has a different perspective on what's important. When you talk to the CXO of an organization, he's very focused or she's very focused around metrics with budgets and finances, probably customer accounts. When you talk to developers, they're more concerned about cycle time and process time and how many story points do they get, what is the velocity of the team, maybe what's the quality of the build. So metrics changes depending on your perspective. And if you start to look at operations, they want to look at uptime, they want to get uptime percentage, they want to know sort of what's the cost of downtime, what's the cost of performance when it's suffering. So it really, which metrics you choose is dependent on where in the organization you are and what your role is. So it's hard for us to make specific guidance that says use this in all cases.
Yeah. By the way, when and why do you come up with the idea?
I've been doing this for a long time. I started with Agile in the late 1990s, doing XP extreme programming back then.
Same.
And yeah. So I started in that world, and I think there's a lot of good principles even from then that we continue to carry forward. And so I've been doing Agile for a long time. I do a lot of consulting and training in Agile. And now the goal, DevOps is sort of a new term, but the same principles. The principles
exactly.
Haven't changed much.
Yeah.
I support the term, but the reality is we're using the same principles that we used all the way back in extreme programming days. You know, they're automated build was important, test-driven development was important, automated testing, all of these things were principles that we've had for several years. We're just couching them in a different term.
Okay, and in terms of such like some kind of consultant, right? Not so consulting.
My company, we do consulting, we also do development, and so we both teach it as well as we actually live it, right? We're doing actual development, and so we're following the principles that we talk about, and we're refining them and making them better as we learn more, and as the industry refines around different practices. But we found that the practices are not that different than what we've been doing for many years. We tend to focus around TFS,
mm-hmm.
So a lot of our business is in TFS.
Oh.
And so a lot of DevOps now for us is how do you take TF capabilities, TFS capabilities, and use them within the context of DevOps. And TFS makes that fairly easy. If you look at the suite of tools, mm-hmm. whether it's from release manager down to automated build, automated testing, those are all things that we use and have used for a long time, and they fit well within DevOps.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so I have one question about TFS related.
Uh-huh.
And are you MVP, right?
I am an MVP.
Yeah,
yes,
cool. So I'd like to ask about DevOps and Microsoft technology created and the case study.
Yeah.
Do you have any case study of the Microsoft technology for the DevOps?
Sure, we've got a bunch of case studies on our website.
Bunch? Yeah. Cool.
Well,
can I see that?
Yeah, you can look it up. We can show you.
After that, I will go to see.
Yeah. You know, we do a large variety of development, so it's not just around ALM per se. Mm-hmm. We do ALM consulting and we do have ALM training, but we also, most of our time is around actually doing development. So we're using Visual Studio tools, talking about best practices, you know, simple things like running code analysis or, you know, setting up automated builds that can turn into automated deployments, continuous integration, sometimes gated check-ins. You know, all those principles that are available from the tools, you know, we think that those are very helpful, and we find that they improve our DevOps metrics for when we do development in the real world.
What kind of tool do you use for the getting the metrics of the DevOps?
So we're actually pulling them out of TFS. So we've got, whether it's the REST API, we're going and pulling out metrics from work items.
Oh.
There's automatically built-in reports, and then you have some of the tools around source code control, automated build, those all provide metrics by default. So for us, the key metrics we're looking at the dev side of the house are around the quality of the build, how frequently is the build succeeding, and then if we continue to continuous deployment, then we can use the same build metrics with different build types to go see those metrics surface via TFS build.
It's not
the only tool we use, but that's one of the tools. In the Microsoft space, yeah.
And how about IaC and infrastructure as code?
Yeah, so that's really interesting for us. I think we're changing our tactic, not us personally, but the industry is changing. Obviously, moving towards support of using Azure and infrastructure as a service. The vast majority of times when we start, especially new development, we're trying to do is platform as a service. So platform as a service.
Platform as a service. Okay.
So with platform as a service or PaaS, you know, the focus there is very much sort of infrastructure as code. But the infrastructure is, we don't talk about it because platform as a service is just sort of there. You don't really have to think about it the same way. So we're doing our best to organize our code and design and architect the code such that it fits in with platform as a service. And we consider the cases where we can't use platform as a service, we consider those exceptions, and we have to manage them differently. But we try, for the most part, to use platform as a service kinds of operations running on Azure to get what we the services that we need.
Okay.
And Azure makes it pretty easy to do deployment.
Yeah.
So because of, you know, they have a lot of automation, PowerShell, I'm a big PowerShell fan.
Yeah.
I use PowerShell a lot. So we use Saki and Pester for testing our PowerShell and Saki for our build scripts. That works in well for doing sort of the continuous integration into a platform as a service.
Okay. So I also want to ask you about the continuous deploy element of the test, because sometimes test more than the unit test could be difficult, right? For example, load testing and acceptance testing and system testing.
Yeah. So we almost always still do UAT. Depends on the size of the project and depends on the length of our sprint. You know, if we're able to do releases frequently, you know, multiple times a week, even sometimes multiple times a day, then the level of our testing is really dependent on how good the testing was for those specific changes. For some customers, we're not able to get to that level of maturity. In those scenarios, we have specifically planned UAT timeframes, especially when we do things like integration work with COTS systems, commercial off-the-shelf systems. When we're using COTS systems that we have a lot of integration with, then in those cases, we're more likely to have a UAT cycle or stage within that. And that will usually happen just after the sprint, rather than within the same sprint. Again, it depends on customers. We know what we want to get to. We want to get test and UAT and everything within the sprint, but it depends on the maturity of the customer and their DevOps practice before we can do that. But that's certainly what we advise, and that's sort of what the trend is towards getting to. Some customers are just not quite there yet.
Okay. And about the UAT, and what kind of tool actually do you use? Cucumber.net?
Yeah, so we're actually using Test Manager for UAT when we get to use tooling on the client side. frequently they've gone ahead and written test cases that are just manual steps for test cases. UAT for us is almost always end users who don't know anything about automation or how to do it. The nice thing about Test Manager is it allows you to sort of mix both what you can do automatically through scripting as well as manual steps, so we can get both at the same time. So rather than the user following the test case and having to log into the application, you know, for every single test case, we can skip some of those steps by putting some test management automation around those steps. So I think it's a mixture, but UAT generally has a lot of manual testing because the end users are not trained QA people, and so that's what we try to get in.
Okay, and by the way, I'm going to ask you about the DevOps and the transition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And maybe you have a lot of the customer using the Microsoft technology, right? And how do they transit to the Agile or waterfall culture into the DevOps culture?
I think there's several steps. First of all, from a transition to DevOps or ALM, application lifecycle management, from waterfall, so to an Agile culture, we find that often the larger companies have to do Agile within the team, that they're exposing waterfall metrics outside of the team. So within the team, they're able to operate as in Agile, but outside the team, that they're doing more of a waterfall process.
Yeah.
But we find that if we can get a small enough team, you know, 10, maybe 12, then they can do Agile within that team, even though externally they're not that. I just got off a project that was, I don't know, $100 million. And in that project, we had many, many teams, and we were interfacing through a waterfall process, but internally we were running an agile process. So, you know, we want to get more to using processes like less and things like that.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, depends on the customer and their maturity. What we insist on is that within our team, within our dev team, we're able to do that in a sense of getting Agile there, and then we try to get those to have cross skill sets. So we've got skill sets of people that are both in dev and in development. They're all integrated in the same team.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What do you think, what is the biggest challenge for the transition to the DevOps?
I think there's a big challenge for management or those people involved with business to realize that in the end, the move to do more testing, the move to go ahead and integrate DevOps, the move to generate metrics, the move to focus on quality and automation, it does cost money, but in the end, it's actually cheaper. Mm. And I think it's hard to get to communicate that with people because they see, I'm spending, you know, a large amount of my budget on things like automated testing, and they don't see the value as immediately as they would. And so just trying to show them that in the long run, this is a cheaper strategic investment, and they shouldn't just look at the fact that maybe it takes a while for developers to learn how to do that automation. You know, test automation is hard, and you know, doing automated deployment takes some engineering skills. And so trying to show management that that's a worthwhile investment is definitely a challenge.
Okay, oh cool. So I must ask you about the value of the outcome of the result of the transition.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that it's reproducible.
Right.
So the fact that we can go ahead and do builds and deployments over and over again, and we can test and verify those processes without somebody making a mistake, it ends up being so much cheaper over the long run. It allows us to be faster.
Yeah.
We can do more and more releases. We can take a release cycle time or a lead time down into shorter time frames. I think all around, you can see all of the metrics that DevOps measures start to get better, start to improve because of the fact that you've put things like automation, automatic deployment, automatic testing in place. And so the way we prove it over time is we start with just a little thing. Hey, let's just start putting unit tests in. And we just show that by the fact that we're having unit tests now, we're automatically catching bugs when we run the build. We automatically have the build fail if a unit test fails so that we can catch and trap those errors early on and often. And so we start with a little bit, inject DevOps practices into that little piece, and then we start expanding that out so we
expand.
Can start.
Yeah.
I mean, rather than taking on, you know, a huge, you know, 10% or 30% increase right at the start, which again, they're going to make that back, right? It's a capital investment that they will make back in a short amount of time, you know, less than a year. So we'll start doing it a little bit, verify and show that it works, and then we'll create authority and show that we've got a practice that works, and then they'll go ahead and expand it out to other parts of the business.
Okay, and how about deploy per day? And would you tell me about some case study of that? Yeah, for example, 10 deploys per day.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Deploy
per day, or deploy life cycle. Time, yeah. And do you have maybe short time deployment cycle? For example, Africa and provides a presentation with 10 deploys per day or something, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So you're saying deploy?
Yeah, per day or one deploy per day could be a...
Oh, per day. Got it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I think for us, It's trying to get it once you're in production. So there's a stage of development where we're not yet in production, but once we're into production, we definitely want to use sort of a lean startup kind of approach where we just make a few changes, then we can get metrics around those startups. So following that principle, if you can do it once per day, you're able to roll back very easily. So there's a couple of principles you have to get placed. You have to make sure you got roll back very easily, and then and I think Microsoft does this with Visual Studio VSO as well. You want to sort of roll out slowly. So I don't mean slowly in terms of time, I mean slowly in terms of scope of impact. So you may start with one or two servers, just address some early adopter customers, and then start to scale it out to more and more customers. Yeah. So rather than impacting everybody and changing everybody and then potentially impacting everybody negatively, you can sort of roll out a little bit at a time and verify that you got adoption and that it's working within the context of a small number of users. So one of the principles that we tend to look for is an opportunity not to do big bang. So small stages, small releases, not big bang. And that's true not just in terms of how much change is in a release, but it's also true in terms of how we actually roll it out, from few customers to more customers to more customers, and then increase those out. And there's obviously engineering cases where that's difficult. You know, if you've got database changes, that will obviously affect everyone. So it's not like it always works, but certainly if you can strive towards doing that, it's good. The other thing that's key in achieving slow adoption is what we call feature flags. So with feature flags, you'll go ahead and have just a few users that have a capability, and then you'll go ahead and turn it on for more and more users. So feature flags work both in during development, because you can check in without actually affecting anyone, and then you can turn on just a few users and more. So again, it allows us to not do big bang, avoid big bang, and do slow rollout to see effects of what we're making, what the changes are.
Cool. And I'm interested in a rollback, and the rollback or the version rollback is very important. To the quick deploy, right?
Yeah.
And so, how to implement the rollback? Well, using a TFS.
There's a number of features. So first of all, if you use feature flags, you can just turn off the flag.
And then
it rolls off automatically. So that's fairly easy. That's not always possible, but a feature flags is a good model. And it's something to look for in the engineering when you're doing the architecture. Hey, what feature flags can we put in place? A second process is to use Azure. So Azure actually has a rollback facility. You can go deploy in Platform as a Service, and you can go check the flag, and you can actually roll stuff back. So that's a pretty nice feature for testing stuff out. I mean, for rolling stuff out and then rolling it back if there's a problem. And then lastly, because we've got automatic deployment, the automated deployment can go ahead and deploy an old version and overwrite a newer version. We allow you to go ahead and do an automated deployment that pushes out newer bits or older bits on top of newer bits, so we can go both directions with the automated deployment.
Oh. So cool.
It's not. It's not a big deal, right? Because at the end of the day, we're deploying the same assets generally in both releases. So changing it to the different, just older versions of those assets is not a big deal. The complexities, of course, are things like database changes and things like that. And so we try to follow principles where database changes are.
Migration and stuff.
They're basically version agnostic. So we try to make it so that database. Well, adding a field, adding a column, we don't delete columns or something like that that would cause version problems. Mm-hmm. So we want to maintain version compatibility as best as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's it. So at last, please say something to the Japanese fan of you. To the camera.
Hey, thanks, folks. I appreciate you listening. Hopefully, I didn't talk too fast and you're able to follow what we had to say. And I look forward to coming to Japan sometime and interacting with you guys in person. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Okay, cheers. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.